This land is your land, and this land is my land. From the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This Land is Your Land by Woody Guthrie is considered by some to be almost a second national anthem. Like This Land, Guthrie has become a national icon, remembered as a true American singer-songwriter, but he was complex as well, and that played out in his music, his writing, his art. Today we'll celebrate and explore the life of this influential singer and songwriter. We are expecting to hear from Ed Cray, a professor of journalism at the University of Southern California, the author of 20 books, including Ramblin' Man, The Life and Times of Woody Guthrie. Unfortunately, we have a technical problem, and Ed Cray is not with us yet. For our listeners, I would love it if you would join the show right now. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, and tell us about your favorite Woody Guthrie song. Maybe you've seen Woody Guthrie. You've heard him. Maybe it's been a part of your life as a folk singer. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, post your question or comment there. Has Woody Guthrie touched your life in some way? I know that This Land is Your Land was one of those songs that we sang every year throughout grade school and had absolutely no idea who Woody Guthrie was at the time and what he would mean to our sense of America going forward. So give me a call and tell me what your memory is. We are expecting Ed Cray. He's a professor of journalism at the University of Southern California. He's the author of Ramblin' Man, The Life and Times of Woody Guthrie. But we have a technical problem. We're not able to get a hold of him. So we would appreciate it if you would join us. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to the Facebook page as well and join us there. 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We would love to hear your memory. What does Woody Guthrie mean to you? We'd love to hear from some folk singers out there, people who are members of the Folk Music Society, the local Folk Music Society. Give us a call and tell us what you think. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a few calls coming in right now. Be patient with our screener while she grabs your call, gets you on the list. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And today we're celebrating and exploring the life of Woody Guthrie. July 14th marks his 100th birthday. What do you think about that? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining me now in the studio is Bill Cohen. He's a popular local folk singer, and he's also a correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. You know his voice well. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How big of a deal is Woody Guthrie when it comes to folk music, in your opinion?
Well, you know, those of us who kind of came after him, I mean, we don't really know him so much personally or directly. But, you know, his music influenced so many people whose songs we do love. Bob Dylan is a perfect example. Bob Dylan, of course, visited Woody Guthrie when Woody Guthrie was in his last few years with the Huntington's disease. Could barely sing at that point. But Bob Dylan idolized him, visited him in the hospital, and was inspired by him. And of course, you know, folk singers today love just about everything Bob Dylan has done. And of course, then we start to look back at Woody Guthrie himself, even if we don't know a lot of his songs, and we start to discover he wrote hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs. It's just amazing. I mean, we all know This Land Is Your Land, Columbia Roll On, songs like that. There was a wealth of other songs. He did children's songs. He did protest songs. He did union songs. He did peace songs. He later did war songs in World War II, basically, you know, reviving the war spirit. Hey, we've got to win this war. So he was very prolific, and we owe a lot to him. I think those of us, even those of us in our 50s and 60s who are somewhat old, we don't really know him firsthand, but we're discovering a lot now as we look back.
Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'd like to hear from our listeners if we can. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a technical problem. We were hoping to hear from Ed Cray. He's the author of Ramblin' Man, The Life and Times of Woody Guthrie, but it's not working. So with us in the studio is Bill Cohen. You know him from Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and he's also a very popular local folk singer. Woody only lived till the age of 55, and really for the most of the last 7 or 8 years of his life, he was debilitated by Huntington's disease. He would be 100 years old this weekend. It's kind of amazing. And someone said, well, how big of an impact really has he had on Americana? And I figure they've devoted an entire center at the Smithsonian to Woody Guthrie. That's significant.
And that, and the idea, you know, today we have singer-songwriters and we put them up on stage and they're kind of the star. Well, Woody Guthrie didn't operate so much like that. He operated more on the idea that he was kind of leading the crowd to participate in singing songs. And that's why so many of his songs were very simple melodies.
The tunes, right.
That you could catch. After you heard a verse and a chorus, you were ready to sing along on the chorus. You know, roll on, Columbia, roll on. That kind of thing. This land is your land. This land is my land. I mean, it's pretty infectious. And even people who aren't that musical, they're singing along. So it's that kind of community spirit. More egalitarian spirit, not so much a performer in the audience, but hey, everybody sing along, that kind of hootenanny spirit that he was very famous for.
Lavore and Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Lavore.
Levon?
Oh, Levon, I'm sorry.
Okay, quite all right. I teach a biology course at Columbus State. And we're just entering the genetic section. And when I talk about the inherited trait of Huntington's, it doesn't mean quite as much until I say, well, do you know of Woody Guthrie? And nobody does, a lot younger than me. And so then I will sing a few bars of This Land Is Your Land. Oh, yes, we know that. And so that becomes an illustration of how a particularly debilitating disease can affect someone who was really very talented.
Because he died so young.
Yes, yes.
Well, thanks, Levon, for your call. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Joining us now is Jeff Place. He's the head archivist at the Smithsonian Folklife Collection and producer of Woody at 100, the Woody Guthrie Centennial Selection. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Good morning.
Woody Guthrie wrote about all a human being is anyway is just a hoping machine. And after reading and paging, you know, through the Woody Guthrie Centennial Collection, Woody at 100, I should say, it's amazing how much hope he did have. He was prolific, not just as a musician, not just as a songwriter, but as a writer, as artist, visual artist. He was amazing.
Well, he was, and he was, you know, and it's actually interesting, you know, the last caller you had a second was talking about Huntington's disease, and, you know, I think that actually, you know, before he got sick, it actually sort of made him more creative, you know, it caused these sort of incredible bursts of energy, like, you know, when they talk about when he wrote Bound for Glory, you know, the poor lady came by to pick up the manuscript, and it was like the pile of papers was like, you know, 6 feet high or something. You know, and he was like that, and he thought, you know, he created, but his creativity was, you know, these songs were meant to be sung by people, and they were meant to be sung, you know, to help, like, fix the wrongs in society that he saw. They weren't, you know, for entertainment. They weren't just sort of like, you know, things that were there. He changed his lyrics all the time, even the things he wrote, just to reflect whatever the current situation was. So they were like, they're supposed to be a tool. I mean, it was like the famous line that Joe Hill, who's a, you know, labor songwriter back, you know, died in, like, in 1915, I think, who was an earlier sort of person who wrote stuff like this, has talked about, like, pamphlets read once, but a song is sung over and over.
And Bill Cohen, who's with me right now, a popular local folk singer, he mentioned the fact that he wanted the song sung together as well, with people singing together.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, and of course, you know, one of his friends and sort of people who, you know, he was with was Pete Seeger, who was 19 when he met Guthrie, you know, and was, sort of learned a lot from him. And Pete is, you know, whereas Guthrie, you know, sort of fell off the scene because of being sick, Pete, you know, championed Guthrie and kept, you know, doing that up to this day. He still does it. And Pete, I think Pete would love a, you know, from what I know of him, he would love a concert where he hardly sung at all and the audience sang the entire concert.
Jeff plays with Robert Santelli. You produced and annotated, as I mentioned earlier, Woody at 100, the Woody Guthrie Centennial Collection. It's 148 pages, 3-CD history of Guthrie. It's filled with photographs of his original lyrics, drawings and paintings, letters, and much more. How do you begin a project like that about a man whose life was so scattered and so whose work was so prolific? Where do you even begin?
Well, I guess it begins in like 1987, the end of 87, when I was hired here, you know, to deal with this new collection, the Folkways Record Collection, which came in the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. And Tony Seeger, Pete's nephew, speaking of Pete, was hired also. It was the two of us. And I started going through all these boxes and boxes that were here. And, you know, there was full of Woody Guthrie's drawings and lyric sheets and correspondence. And there was these walls of these old, like, disc recordings, you know, before tape was invented. And we'd go through and we'd, like, we're trying to drop the needle a little bit to see what was on each one. And I, you know, identified a few hundred Woody Guthrie things. So over the last 25 years, I've been kind of like working with this material day in and day out, and it, you know, getting to know it really well. And what has always struck me, even going back to the early days, is there's all this stuff is here, and only just a very few people have ever really experienced it because they've come to visit the archive and we've pulled this stuff out of the back room. You know, there's got to be a way to get this stuff out for more people to appreciate. So that's kind of why this, the coffee table book, and why it's full of the images. To me, you know, the music is a part of it, but also all those images and stuff that's in the book is very much a part of what I was trying to accomplish.
By the way, it's a beautiful book, something you pick up again and again and again. And if listeners are interested in checking out the book, it is available for purchase. So you can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides, and we'll have a link there for you that you can use to check it out. With me right now, Jeff Place. He's head archivist for the Smithsonian Folklife Collection and producer of Woody at 100, the Woody Guthrie Centennial Collection. Also with me, Bill Cohen, local popular folk singer and correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The weather, a pleasant picture for central Ohio for today. Mostly sunny today with a high of 90 degrees expected. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 68. On Friday, partly sunny. A chance of showers tomorrow afternoon, maybe even a thunderstorm, mainly afternoon, and a high of 81. Friday night, showers likely and possibly another thunderstorm as well, a low of 68. By Saturday, mostly cloudy, and again a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high of 82. We can use the water. And the temperature right now, 84 degrees.
Support for 89.7 comes from OSU's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More information at glenn.osu.edu.
If you're hungry for more than just headlines and short sound bites about our community, watch Columbus on the Record. It's every Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. You can get your fill of in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis of the issues that affect Columbus and Central Ohio. Join host Mike Thompson and his array of guests as they take on the issues of the day, anything from Columbus City Hall to Ohio as a battleground state for the 2012 election. Watch Columbus on the Record tomorrow night and each Friday night at 8:30 on our sister station, WOSU-TV. Become a basic member of WOSU and 89.7. Just go to WOSU.org and sign up today.
Well, I'm gonna tell you fascists, you may be surprised. People in this world are getting organized. You're bound to lose, you fascists bound to lose.
Woo! All you fascists bound to lose.
That's a recording of All You Fascists Bound to Lose, a short song from one of Woody Guthrie's radio broadcasts sometime in the 1940s. July 14th marks the 100th birthday of Woody Guthrie, national icon remembered as a true American singer-songwriter, but also a complex man whose life's experience played out in his music. Jeff Place is with us. He's been an archivist for the Ralph Rinzler Folklife Archives and Collections at the Smithsonian Center for Folklife and Cultural Heritage. Since 1988, he's been involved in the compilation of 38 CDs for Smithsonian Folkways Recording, a nonprofit label of the Smithsonian Institution, including Woody Guthrie's Long Ways to Travel, the unreleased Folkways Masters, which won him the 1994 Brenda McCollum Prize from the American Folklore Society, and the Ash Recordings of Woody Guthrie. He's a member of the curatorial team for the Traveling Woody Guthrie exhibition as well. It's called This Land is Your Land. Once again, Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Sure thing.
Also with us, Bill Cohen, a local folk singer and correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Jeff Place, All You Fascists Bound to Lose. It's a reflection. It's one of his radical leanings, the sort of sentiment that marked him as a subversive by the FBI. But he was never really a card-carrying member of much of anything. But a lot of music came out of that.
Well, I don't think Woody was a person who joined things.
Right.
He was, you know, kind of his own thing. You know, he lived in this communal house called the Almanac House, and, you know, all the other people, including Pete Seeger, who lived there, kind of let him do his own thing because they kind of saw him as this genius and let him create, you know. But, you know, that All You Fascists Bound to Lose actually was from a patriotic period, because that thing was from a radio show called the Martins and Coys, which Alan Lomax produced, which they used the sort of the Hatfield-McCoy kind of model about these two feuding families who got together, you know, and put their differences aside to fight Hitler. So during the Almanac period, he was writing all sorts of anti-fascist songs, but mm-hmm. what he was referring to was Mussolini and Hitler, so mm-hmm. it was all pro-U.S.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've read is that even if Woody Guthrie wasn't a member of the Communist Party around 1939 and 40, he believed in a lot of what the party was saying, and therefore, in the late 30s, he and the Almanac Singers, they were singing songs of peace when Stalin and Hitler signed the No Aggression Pact. And then when Hitler attacked the Soviet Union, suddenly he switched, the party switched, and Woody Guthrie switched and said, we've got to fight these fascists.
That's true. I mean, he was like, he wrote a column for the Communist, you know, the Daily Worker.
Right.
But I don't think he was ever a member of the party. I think he believed in a lot of what they were saying, just from his experiences, seeing what was the plight of, you know, the Arkies and the Okies. And that's true. Early when he first got to town, I mean, well, actually, the Almanac Singers, when they were did this, the record called, he's referring to a record called The Strange Death of John Doe, which is a whole thing of songs that were sort of anti-World War II, isolationist kind of. It was because, you know, there was a pact between the Soviet Union and Hitler, so Hitler to them was not an enemy. And then, of course, when Hitler attacked the Soviet Union, immediately they got all totally pro, you know, got totally anti-Hitler. But when that John Doe was recorded by the Almanac Singers, Woody was not a member of that group yet.
You know, I was reading Studs Terkel wrote in the foreword to Ed Cray's book Ramblin' Man that. Nobody knows the exact number of songs Woody Guthrie wrote. I've read in my research anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000. Wow, why the disparity? What do you think, Jeff Place, about that?
It probably is more. You know, who knows? I mean, Pete Seeger talks said that, you know, Woody had this scatteration is the word he used, technique, where he would just write like millions of songs and throw them up, and a few of them would stick, you know. And, you know, we have like boxes of lyric sheets here of what he created, you know, and there's a lot of them that aren't very good, you know, but there's a lot of just completely brilliant things in there. So, but the thing about Woody Guthrie is, you know, he was just, again, it's just sort of like a, I think of a top that's like spinning around throwing sparks off, right? He was constantly, when he was traveling, you know, he would like all of a sudden sit down at whoever he's staying with, their dinner, the breakfast table, and write a bunch of songs on a, you know, on a grocery bag or something, and then disappear and leave all this stuff behind. The only reason we have all these lyrics is because his wife, Marjorie, went around and actually gathered them up. You know, I it's like one of the last things I said in the book. I think that, you know, that we're still going to be finding for years, like, some of these grandfathers' cedar chests are going to be all of a sudden a folder full of Woody Guthrie songs.
Was hired to write songs when the I think it was a dam that was built in the Columbia River, and back in 1941, something around that. And he did write a pretty famous song. Bill Cohen, why don't you tell us about it?
Well, it's called the Columbia Roll On. It's very popular because it has a chorus, a repeating chorus, that is just so easy to sing along with. And we're talking about the Bonneville Dam, I guess it was, and the Columbia River. And he saw this as a great step forward, bringing lightness to the dark, the environmentally pure energy, I guess it was seen back then, and bringing electricity to areas of the country that didn't have it.
Okay. You want to sing that?
Well, I'll sing a few verses for you. Otherwise, we'd be here forever. But,
okay.
Let's try it here.
Okay.
Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. Green Douglas fir where the waters cut through. Down her wild mountains and canyons she flew. Canadian Northwest to the ocean so blue. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. At Bonneville now there are ships in the locks. Waters rise and cleared all the rocks. Shiploads aplenty will steam past the docks. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. And on up the river is Grand Coulee Dam, the mightiest thing ever built by a man, to run the great factories and water the land. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. One more time, everyone. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. So roll on, Columbia, roll on.
That's Bill Cohen singing Roll on Columbia. It's a song written by Woody Guthrie. Also with us, Jeff Place, head archivist at the Smithsonian Folklife Collection. Jeff, there are some pretty distinct periods in Woody Guthrie's songwriting career, and one of them did revolve around that. That dam, he was hired, they thought it was going to be a year-long job. It ended up being about a month, but he wrote 26 songs in 1 month.
Which actually, you know, it's like... That's fairly typical, if not slow, for him. You know, I think that, you know, he talked about getting up in the morning, reading the newspaper, and writing like, you know, five or six before lunchtime. But yeah, he was, you know, it was a very creative. It was like 1941. He was out there, and what they were doing is actually they were going to make a I don't want to say a propaganda film, but sort of a film that's, you know, to promote building these dams on the Columbia River. And Woody was hired. This was going to be music that went along with the film.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it. And then, oddly enough, those discs kind of got, ended up like stored in the back room for years, the original discs. And one of the BPA, Vaudeville Power employees, actually found them. Somebody like was almost trying to throw them out. But those songs have persisted. And he actually went back again in 47 to the Dam and performed those songs for a while and helped promote, you know, what they were doing.
We're celebrating what would have been the 100th birthday of Woody Guthrie. With me, you just heard Jeff Place, head archivist at the Smithsonian Folklife Collection. And also with us, Bill Cohen, local folk singer. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Jeff, you've talked about the mythology of Woody Guthrie as the, quote, hobo guy on the train, but he was really more of an intellectual who hung around with other intellectuals and but felt just as comfortable with migrant workers in California. How did he manage sort of this dual or multifaceted existence?
You know, he always talked as if he'd been out working with these people. I don't think he ever did a lot of work. He kind of, you know, when he first started really going out to hang out with a lot of these people in California, he was acting as sort of a roving like journalist, a mm-hmm. correspondent for like a, you know, KFVD radio in California. You know, he got along fine. Those are his people. But at the same time, you know, he, there's all the mythology. Like, you know, the movie that came out that had David Carradine in 1976, like the whole movie is him riding, you know, freight trains and things, which, you know, I'm sure he did on various occasions. But he also used to have jobs periodically where he's making some money on the radio, and he'd get enough money to put a down payment on a car, and he would drive off in the car and wait for them to try to find him. Interesting guy, but you know, the thing, he was very much very well read. He spent a ton of time in the library reading. One of the most fascinating things we have in our collection here is we have a book. I forgot the title, but it's more or less the Federalist Papers. You know, it's Thomas Jefferson and Hamilton and all John Locke and everybody talking about this, you know, the Constitution and Bill of Rights and stuff. And it belonged to Guthrie. It's like signed. Well, you know, he signs the front part of it. And through the entire book, he debates the founding fathers in the margin. These like incredible notes. Constitution shouldn't be adopted too fast. He has all these arrows and he's pointing at stuff. So the guy, you know, he's a lot more complicated than people that he tried to pretend to be.
At one point, he sat down and wrote about all the psychology he had ever learned.
Oh yeah, and he, you know, he there's some weird stuff. Like he wrote a 20-minute thing, which is really awful. It's all pretty much in the same chord. We have it here in the archive, where he put the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam to like music, to folk music.
So, how do you, as a curator, what do you do with that?
Well, it's digitized. It's here, and a scholar wants to come in and listen to it. They can go for it, you know. I mean, I've listened to sections of it, and it's like you put you to sleep.
Okay. Ed in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Thank you. Hey, I just wanted to thank Bill Cohen. That was a treat. He ought to be on there singing more often.
Well, I love music shows, Ed. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Whenever I have a good excuse in the what would have been the 100th birthday of Woody Guthrie is as good excuse as any. You know, fire played a recurring and tragic role in Woody Guthrie's life. His sister and daughter were killed and his father seriously injured and one of his childhood homes was destroyed. Does that sort of tragedy, in your opinion, Jeff, play out much in his music?
I don't know about his music. I mean, I think, you know, that he kind of went with it. I think that his daughter, Kathy, who died when she was four, he'd actually been kind of he claimed he was composing with her. A lot of his children's songs, actually many of the phrases he used came from her, her questions, inquisitiveness and stuff. And she died in a fire, you know, like I say, right not long after her fourth birthday. And pretty much after that, I mean, between the Huntington starting to kick in and just really crippled him. I don't think he ever was quite as creative again. And, you know, his output just sort of really fell off. So that one really affected him. And he also managed to light himself on fire in the early 50s. He poured kerosene on a fire to try to get it to was smoldering. Mm-hmm. And after that, he really couldn't play guitar anymore. He's also the disease. It was pretty bad at that point. He pretty much was out of it. But, you know, that was pretty much the end right there.
I wondered if the disease and the debilitation of the disease had it contributed to the whole fire. I was outside of, it was some campground in Florida when he threw that kerosene on the fire. I wondered, was it some kind of problem with the disease? He couldn't get out of the way fast enough, or was it just it surprised him too?
Well, what I understand about the disease, it's one of those things, your brain is functioning perfectly, but your body has like the shakes and you start losing your motor control.
Mm-hmm.
And your ability to speak and eventually your ability to eat, you know. And so Yeah, I've seen like some film footage that his daughter Nora has of him at their house, like in the 50s, and he's sort of shaking and trying to light a cigarette. So I'm sure, you know, it's part of that. One thing you see if you look at the book, the Woody 100 book, is, you know, it's really obvious if you look at his like cartoons and drawings from the early period and his handwriting, which is this beautiful script.
Yes.
In 1940, and you follow it to like the late 40s, and it's starting to get less and less. You know, his pictures are getting more abstract, and by the time you hit like 1950, he looks like he's a 6-year-old writing. So you see, like, even before like people were really knowing he had that disease, you could see it was starting to happen.
His mother also had Huntington's disease, and she was, at least we think, she was had a mental illness and was institutionalized at some point, as was he, in a psychiatric hospital. I didn't understand that. Was that because it was considered a psychiatric problem?
Yeah, they didn't quite know what it was. I think for a long time, people thought he was that alcohol. He did drink a lot, but they thought that was the issue. I mean, you know, it was one of those classic stories. He ended up, like, he was out, like, hitchhiking somewhere in New Jersey and got picked up by the police, who thought he was this old drunk, and put him in, you know, the tank. And then they thought, you know, his manager called, so he has these problems. They put him in a psychiatric institute. And somebody says, somebody went in and talked to the doctor and says, this guy's really delusional. He says he's a famous folk singer and he has records on RCA, you know? we need to watch out for this guy. He was in, basically, they didn't know what to do with Huntington's at that point. And eventually somebody diagnosed it. But, you know, he was in a hospital in New Jersey for a long time. Eventually they brought him back to a hospital, you know, in Brooklyn so he'd be closer to the family.
Alan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Hey, hello, Ann. This is Alan Johnson, and I'm also saying hello to Bill.
Hello, Alan Johnson.
Hello, Alan.
very nice music there, Bill. Thank you for serenading us.
Well, thank you.
Woody was one of my first musical heroes, possibly because of the connection with Bob Dylan, and maybe Bill can talk a little bit about that, but... I just really have always liked him because he was every man. He kind of related to the Dust Bowl people. He related to the people in Oregon. He related to the striking workers. And he just was every man, and he wrote all the songs of every man. And that's he's still one of my great heroes, musically speaking.
And do you hear the link between Dylan and Woody Guthrie in the way they sing? I mean, neither of them had a sweet voice. You wouldn't say their singing voices were pleasant, but they both adopted the idea that doesn't matter. In fact, sometimes you don't want a sweet voice singing a song about the Dust Bowl or migrant workers' poverty. Maybe you want a gruff voice, a little off key, a little off tune. That makes it more authentic. It almost blends in with the message. The tune blends into the message. So they both did that.
Jeff Place, I mean, how many musicians do we even know that say they were famous musicians that say they were influenced by Woody Guthrie? I mean, from Bruce Springsteen to, you know, Billy Bragg and on.
I'm going to make one quick comment back to the last thing that was said. And it was funny, Woody Guthrie's best friend was Cisco Houston, who played with him on all his records. Not all his records, most of his records. Mm-hmm. Cisco Houston had movie star, like Clark Gable looks, and an absolutely perfect, beautiful singing voice. And he got dissed for it. I mean, everybody, like, didn't respect him. Because he sang, he just, you know. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I've always, like, scholars and people talk about links on a chain as a concept. And, you know, the chain can go back to Joe Hill, can go back to other people like Dave McCarn and some of the topical songwriters of the 20s. And it comes through, the big link in the middle is Woody Guthrie. And then, of course, there's people like Dylan after him, and there's Pete Seeger, then Dylan, and then Phil Oakes. And you move it up to, like, you know, even Tom Morello these days. And, you know, there's many people on the chain who kind of refer back to other links, you know, maybe not as far back as Woody, but they don't know about Woody, and then eventually they kind of find their way back to Woody and realize, oh, that's where that came from. It was one of those things where, mainly because of Seeger, you know, and the Weavers and people singing his songs and the people who were his friends, he got into the whole folk revival of the 50s. It would probably have been pretty hard in those days to find many folk revival records that didn't have a Woody Guthrie song on them. You know, his stuff just was just like everybody was doing them. So it was extremely influential.
My guest, Jeff Place, head archivist at the Smithsonian Folklife Collection and producer of Woody at 100, the Woody Guthrie Centennial Collection. Also with us, Bill Cohen, popular local folk singer and correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, if you recognize his voice. We'll continue our celebration of Woody at 100 when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
land is your land.
This Saturday marks the centennial of Woody Guthrie's birth. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about his life and music with Jeff Place, who co-produced a new Guthrie box set and co-wrote the companion book, and Ed Cray, who wrote a biography of Guthrie called Ramblin' Man that's published in a new edition. Join us.
Terry Gross and Fresh Air coming your way in just about 20 minutes here at 89.7 NPR News. Fresh Air is here Monday through Friday from noon until 1 o'clock. In the weather forecast, mostly sunny today, a high of 90 is expected. Clouds moving in tonight with an overnight low of 68. Then on Friday, partly sunny, a chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow, mainly afternoon, and a high of 81. Tomorrow night, showers likely, maybe even another thunderstorm, an overnight low of 68. And then on Saturday, mostly cloudy, with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high expected to be about 82 on Saturday. Right now, we have 85 degrees at our studios in the Fawcett Center on the Ohio State University campus.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra. The seventh season of Jazzoo kicks off Friday, July 13th with Rock and Roll Meets the Blues, featuring Jonathan Elliott at the Columbus Zoo. Gates at 6:30, showtime at 8. Tickets and details at jazzartsgroup.org.
The WOSU member, public Media Member Card of the Month is for the Columbus Children's Theater. Enjoy two-for-one admission. Join NPR News at the $85 level and get a member card. Just visit WOSU.org.
Back in 1927, I had a little farm and I called it heaven. Prices up and rain come down and I hauled my crops all into town. I got the money. Bought clothes and groceries, fed the kids, took it easy. The rain it quit and the wind got high and the black old dust storms filled the sky. And I swapped my farm for a Ford machine and I filled it full of this gas I lean and started.
Woody Guthrie wrote Talkin' Dust Bowl while he lived in Pampa, Texas. According to the Smithsonian, what I read in the book tells the story of poor farmers who, after losing everything, loaded up their cars and headed to California. The idea of moving on played an ongoing role in Woody Guthrie's life, which ended when he was 55 of complications from Huntington's disease, genetic disorder inherited from his mother. Let's talk about that Dust Bowl era for a little while. Jeff Place, to what extent did that influence his music going forward after that era?
Well, you know, he was living in Pampa, Texas, with his father at that point when a lot of that was happening. Mm-hmm. And I think he talks about it in the song, "So Long It's Been Good to Know You," this major dust storm coming through there. So it certainly affected him. He was moving around a lot by then, too, going out to California. So I guess he started writing these sort of topical songs for this little radio show he had with some of his relatives in Pampa. When he got out to California on KFVD radio and started performing with his cousin on the air, he started doing a lot of these songs because a lot of the audience he had were these people, the Okies and Arkies, who were tuning into his show for his sort of comic patter and his like songs. So he started writing about those experiences. And again, he went out, at one point on behalf of the station to do some sort of reporting on the conditions in the these migrant farm, camps and stuff. And, he saw firsthand what how these people were living, making no money and the kids starving and all that. So it really affected him, And at that point, he started getting more and more political.
In the late 1960s, of course, Cesar Chavez helped organize the California farm workers. It was kind of the first successful unionization. But Woody Guthrie, of course, was talking about the problems of migrant workers for many years before that. One of his signature songs, Pastures of Plenty, let me just read just a couple verses on it here. It's a mighty hard road that my poor hands have hoed. My poor feet have traveled a hot, dusty road. Out of your dust bowl and westward we rolled, and your desert was hot and your mountain was cold. I've worked in your orchards of peaches and prunes, slept on the ground in the light of the moon. On the edge of your city, you've seen us, and then we come with the dust and we go with the wind. So that's the story there of the Dust Bowl farmers from Oklahoma. The land literally ripped out from under them and heading west to California, where they thought there were going to be all these thousands of jobs in the orchards. And yet there were so many of them that with supply and demand, supply was so high, their wages could be very low. And they suffered quite a lot. And so he wrote a lot of songs about that.
it was interesting because sometime around 1990, I got to know Augustine Lira, who's one of the current like United Farm Workers' main sort of troubadour musicians. And he worked a lot with Dolores Huerta, who's worked with Chavez. And I Xeroxed the original lyrics of Pastures of Plenty for Augustine, who had it framed and hanging in his office out there. So, you know, those folks are very aware of that song.
Woody Guthrie did not have much of a formal education, but he appeared at a very young age to be very intelligent. But if there's one word, and I don't read or hear about him, especially given the prolific nature of his songwriting and his poetry and prose and drawing and painting, is genius. He wasn't necessarily considered a genius. How do you rank him, Jeff Place, in terms of that kind of thing?
You know, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you know, I sort of think of him as a genius, you know. I think, you know, again, there's people who come along, you know, I've followed music, who come along periodically, who are just these, you know, they change the way the music they're doing is done, and it's sort of, they create this new image. I mean, there's people like Jimmy Rogers and Robert Johnson and even Hendrix, you know, mm-hmm. how everybody played electric guitar after Jimi Hendrix was different. I think people writing their own songs and topical songs and that kind of 20th century balladeer, you know, Woody kind of defined a certain image that it kind of everybody since then, you know, has done. I you know, again, it was just this guy just full of energy and creativity. And I, you know, I would say I consider him a genius. You know, the sad thing was is because just the nature of his disease, he really only had a career of about 10 years
right.
where he was, you know, at his peak, where he was actually creating stuff, which is a very short period of time.
We have a comment from Brent on Facebook. He says the disease is called Huntington's chorea. It's the same word that choreography comes from. Some people, when they get the disease, walk on tiptoe as if they're dancing. He says, Ramblin' Around Your City is one of my favorite Woody tunes, and Do Re Mi. Thanks for that comment. And also from Dale in Worthington, he says, Arlo Guthrie performed many anti-war protest songs as well. What was his father's effect on his music? Jeff Place, any sense?
I think it affected him. Certainly he did his father's songs. I mean, if you look, you know, Arlo's, you know, certainly, you know, has been for years trying to, you know, out, you know, live down the whole thing about being Woody's, you know, son. He kind of wants to be known for his own thing. So a lot of times you see him at conferences and people want him to do a whole evening of Woody Guthrie songs, and he kind of like balks at that, you know. But he certainly picked up that, you know, Alice's Restaurant,
yeah.
Really right out of that talking blues history, you know. And I'm sure, you know, he really, you know, loves his father. It's just he's also trying to be himself too. But you know, you hear a lot of, you know, Woody kind of stuff in Arlo's music, and the rest of the family, like that whole family, are kind of like a, you know, Arlo's whole family is kind of like the Von Trapp family. They have a big you know, big bus and like his all his kids and grandkids and stuff, and they travel around for these giant Guthrie family concerts, and you know, the Guthries, you know, they've been doing that for a while now.
Symbolically, Alice's Restaurant was the big hit for Arlo in 1967, the very year that Woody Guthrie, his dad, died.
614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Jeff Place, head archivist at the Smithsonian Folklife Collection. Bill in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
You're welcome.
It occurred to me listening to the show, I've always been a big Woody Guthrie fan, but I was wondering what, if any, connection there was between Woody and Will Rogers. And I can take any answer off the air. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill. Jeff Place?
Yeah, well, actually, you want to go first?
No, Jeff Place, go ahead.
Okay, all right. I thought he was going to talk. But okay, anyway, no, I mean, he definitely was influenced by Will Rogers. You know, he talks about going with his mother, you know, back when she was, you know, still in good health, to like the local movie theater, and they'd see like these short films of Will Rogers. And, you know, Will Rogers was another guy from the same part of the world as Woody. And I think if you talk about Dylan being sort of self-professed Woody Guthrie jukebox when he first started out, I mean, Woody's entire, like, persona on stage, which is another point to make about Woody Guthrie,
yes.
is that there was a stage Woody Guthrie, which you hear, like, if you listen to the Library of Congress recordings, he's sort of country kind of philosopher guy, and that's not who – that's when he wasn't being Woody Guthrie, that's not who he was, but it was really very much based on the whole idea of Will Rogers.
He was a friend to all the downtrodden, including African Americans, but his childhood was pretty steeped in racism, especially where he grew up in Oklahoma, and that changed when he was a youngster because of his attraction to music and that shoeshine man named George, right? So where he learned to play the harmonica?
Well, it kept going even after that. I mean, there was an African American town called Boley right next door to Okemah, and apparently there was all sorts of KKK activity. There was a race riot and lynchings and things like that. And apparently, at one point, even when he was on KFVD radio in California broadcasting, he used the N word and in the middle of this thing and talking about that, and somebody like called him on it. African American guy called him up and started explaining what that meant to him, and he was like, really apologetic, said, "Man, I'm never going to do that again. I'm sorry."
Mm-hmm. You mentioned his family, and it's pretty amazing how much access they've given people over the years to the archive and the work that he has that was never put to music. Woody's daughter Nora helped, or with her help, a German musician chose 14 songs, translated them into German, and composed music for them in the style of, a Weimar cabaret. There was a tuba and brass section with it, too. And British folk singer Billy Bragg with the Roots Rockers, Wilco, produced rock and roll out of 15 previously unpublished Woody Guthrie lyrics, again at the behest of Nora. To what extent has his popularity in this way sort of surpassed national boundaries? I guess he worked with his mother-in-law at one point and did a collection of Yiddish songs.
Well, yeah, his mother-in-law was Marjorie, his second wife, Arlo, and Nora's mother. Her mother was like this famous Yiddish poet. So he grew up in that world. So he actually, another one of his interesting things, he wrote an entire song, which is the Hanukkah story. It was like straight from the Bible. And he wrote a whole bunch of Hanukkah songs, during that time period. And Nora, who's been like, sort of like for years now, been trying to encourage people to come back and use all these like lyric sheets, because there's tons of lyric sheets and no one really knew what the music was. It's just like, poetry on pages.
Mm-hmm.
So, everything from the klezmer, thing of the Jewish songs to like the German one and Billy and this other people have recorded things. There's like Rob Wasserman, a CD in the last year or so of him doing stuff with other people using some of those lyrics. She's been trying to encourage people to use his lyrics and keep kind of Woody's creativity, keep it going, because there's probably so much more that's there that people haven't known about yet.
Another thing, were his children's songs, and I guess I never really made the connection before the Songs to Grow On series that he did. Of course, you mentioned earlier that it was his daughter Catherine who was lost to the fire and who inspired him to write that really a pretty amazing array of incredible songs for children.
Well, he did. And those things, interestingly enough, I think that Moses Ash, who was the guy who founded Folkways Records and had a couple of labels called Ash and Disc Records before that, was kind of, his benefactor. He recorded. That's why we have all these recordings in the Smithsonian, because Ash recorded everything Woody wanted to record, and basically would just give him like $20, every like once a week or every so often, and never released, but just a sliver of them. But somehow Ash had the smarts enough to spot those kids' songs for what they were and put them out, and they became like extremely like important and popular in the children's music field. I mean, to the point where every time Ash would start a new record label, almost the first thing he would issue on the new label would be to reissue those kids' records of Woody Guthrie.
He never, correct me if I'm wrong, but he never copyrighted his work. Certainly he was intelligent enough to understand the consequences of that. Why didn't he?
You're right. I think it was later on. It was Marjorie and his manager,
yeah,
Harold, who started copywriting his material. I think it's the politics again. It's like, that there's he belonged to an organization called People Songs, which they had like a whole library of songs, and they were all kind of communally owned, where people would, there was no author credit on it. It's just written by People Songs, right? And Woody, I guess, actually did start sort of saying, well, these are my songs. I need to get credit for it. But again, it's getting back to this idea that, this is the people's music, and it's for the people, and it shouldn't be owned by anybody. I think there's certainly that attitude there initially.
And, in the original This Land Is Your Land, there's a verse which doesn't get sung very often because it's controversial, but it shows his left-wing views. He doesn't really like the idea of private property. There's something about a sign. There's a sign, as I went strolling, there's a sign that says, no trespassing, and he dismisses that.
And the other side is blank, and that's for you and me and you.
That's for you and me, yeah, yeah.
Right.
And there's actually another verse in there about I saw my people in the shadow of the steeple standing in bread lines, and it's in the original too. So yeah, it started off as a very different song than what it became later.
It was a reaction song to God Bless America.
That's true. It was originally called God Blessed America for You and Me. Was the original title, which was crossed out, and then to This Land Is Made for You and Me.
when you were selecting the pieces for the three CD collection, what parts of his work, what's the theme? I mean, how did you go about that, given, you know, the amount to choose from?
Well, I think the first CD was going to be like the absolute, like, you know, you have to have him, you know, the greatest hits, as it were.
Okay.
You know, and I was trying to also, like, you know, a lot of the collections over the years, including ones I've worked on, tend to focus on, like, his recordings for a particular record label or a particular time. So I wanted to go back and see if I could, you know, get the permission to do some of the Library of Congress things so I could incorporate things from earlier, you know, the Dust Bowl stuff in there. The second one, I was really wanted to focus on mostly Woody's own songs he wrote, as opposed to, you know, he recorded hundreds of, like, this traditional folk songs, like, you know, John Henry and Skit, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of stayed away from that because, you know, that's just him just doing folk songs. So the third disc is where I try to get into, you know, there's all these weird little things we have in the archive, little bits and pieces of stuff, which never would have made an entire record you could have put out, but they become these things that they fit perfectly as a third disc there, like all these radio programs that no one's heard in years, and a few songs here and there that have never been released. And then we also discovered, I shouldn't say we, but Peter LaChapelle, who was doing a fellowship studying at the Smithsonian about 10 years ago, had discovered these five instantaneous discs that Woody had recorded in 1939 in L.A. during his radio period, including a couple of songs that had never been out before. But these are like the earliest known recordings of Woody. And his version of Do Re Mi on there and his version of Ain't Got No Home in This World Anymore are slightly different lyrics than the version that came later. So those are kind of really kind of cool to find. So that allowed me to go there and make this sort of interesting CD of oddities and additions and, you know, stuff.
You know, an amazing part of Woody at 100 is the array of documents that are reproduced and also his paintings and drawings. It must have just been a drop in the bucket, what you put into the book. But how did you go about that? Because you're right, even his penmanship was beautiful.
Well, you know, there's certain things in, you know, the images and things that go that relate directly to songs. That was an easy place to start.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, no, if you look at those drawings in there, that's like, you know, I can't even imagine that's like 5% of what we have here. So, you know, I would go through and I would look for just things that represented kind of ideas like don't pick this fruit. So, you know, talking about the migrant workers and, you know, and some of his barroom photos and some sort of semi-self-portrait things of the guy with the curly hair playing guitar for the woman, you know, those kinds of things. And there's a couple of his more abstract things. And then he did a whole bunch of watercolors and things for you know, he was trying to design all the graphics for his kids, for the kids' records, and Moash did not use those graphics that Woody did, but they were still sitting here. So actually, when we reissued the stuff in 1991 on CD, we actually did go back and use some of Woody's images. So, you know, I was trying to get a little bit of that, and the same thing with, you know, letters. Some of those letters correspond to the story that's being told in the book. So, you know, the other things are just sort of representing different sort of facets of Woody Guthrie, like songs that things he was passionate about at some point in his life. Like there's a song called The Blinding of Isaac Woodward that he was all excited about. And as near as I can tell, he actually never got around to recording it for Ash, but he was keep going on about how he had to record it and had to be released. So that kind of stuff.
Jeff Place, I want to thank you for joining us today so much.
Sure.
Jeff Place is head archivist at the Smithsonian Folklife Collection and also producer of Woody at 100, the Woody Guthrie Centennial Selection. We'll have a link for you if you want to learn more about that. Also, Bill Cohen, tell us about the celebration this weekend.
Well, if you want to hear some of these Woody Guthrie songs and sing along to them, come on out Saturday, July 14th, 7 o'clock. We're going to celebrate Woody Guthrie songs at the Mennonite Church Fellowship Hall, 35 East Oakland Park in Clintonville. We'll watch a brief video documentary. We'll have a display of Woody Guthrie memorabilia. And the highlight really will be we're going to sit around and sing a couple of dozen of Woody Guthrie songs. Also, we're going to try to hopefully conjure up the spirit of Woody Guthrie with a special guest. It's not Arlo.
Okay.
But hopefully the spirit of Woody Guthrie will appear.
Can you conjure up some more music for us as we end the hour?
Okay. I guess we could do a little This Land Is Your Land.
All right.
I guess. Let me see if I can get the right...
We'll get it as Bill does
okay.
That. I will say thanks to
this
our guests.
This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley.
This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at wosu.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.